And hello, everyone. Hello,
Love
welcome to
Radio.
Hello, everyone. We don't have any more music this evening, but we're going to be playing it later on. I'm Kay Thompson, and welcome to Kay Thompson Live. Boy, do we have an exciting show for you tonight. A lot of things happening in New York and out of New York, and a lot of different books out and different information about what's happening in town, around town, of course, in New York and New Jersey and all over the world. So we're going to be talking to you and let you know about a whole lot of things going on. As a matter of fact, I understand that the African American History Museum is a new one coming to New York City. And I think there was an article, you know, in the Daily Challenge newspaper some time ago. And they stated that a bill had been proposed in the United States Congress to establish a museum connected with the African Burial Ground in Lower Manhattan. And reportedly, the African Burial Ground International Memorial Museum and Education Act, if passed, would authorize federal funding of the project. And as soon as, Byron calls them, Byron Saunders, and then Wayne Gilman call him, we're going to be asking Byron about it and Wayne. So, who's on? Is that you, Eric?
I'm on. Byron
Eric
is
in.
Here. Hey, this is
Byron.
This is also me.
Eric
this
is on.
This is also me. Okay. This is also your son, Citizen Payne, calling from my place because I got a little bit of a cold. So I don't want to. Because I got a little bit of a cold. Everybody don't want to give my mom my cold and all that.
Thanks.
You went and me and Byron on other lines just before we get started. You went to an event the other night with a whole bunch of radio personalities from WLIB, WBLS. You went there last night. How was that affair last night?
Yeah, Eric, Lisa and I went, Eric, and Byron and so forth. We had a good time. A lot of the known people were there, a lot of people I haven't seen in a long time. And, by the way, Melba Moore. I know everybody remembers Melba. She's a Newarker, New Jersey. And she sang, and she was absolutely fantastic. Wow, boy. Vi Higginson was also there. Vi Higginson did created Mama I Wanna Sing. As a matter of fact, she was the first person that gave me the opportunity to be on stage in New York as a fill-in person for playing the narrator of the whole show of Mama I Want to Sing at the Hampton Theater, had a good time.
And she was also the first woman on WBLS, first woman DJ on WBLS back in the day with Frankie Crocker and all those guys. And you had a lot of the legendary names that I grew up with, and you had, I guess, you had the current people over there at WLIB, WBLS. Is that correct? Is that correct?
Yeah, a lot of people were, but I didn't get to see a lot of them. I was waving to them from afar, but it was good time. Yeah, and Lisa was with me. But Lisa, what do you have?
They were all there.
Yeah, they were all there practically. And I was so glad to see them. Some people, of course, looked, very different, and I would imagine they were saying the same thing about me, but it was great, absolutely great, and thanks to Margot, and thanks to Ann Tripp, and thanks to who else, Donna Wilson. So, and, Bob Law has gotten taller. He is fantastic.
Black Radio
Lloyd
is a little
Strayhorn.
Bit different.
Say
Lloyd
again?
Strayhorn was there.
Lloyd Strayhorn was there.
Byron, but for me, this is like kind of listening my mom listening to my mom rattle off all these names. You know, it's kind of like a who's who for me. You know, being a kind of like almost when you're talking about celebrities or movie stars. You know, all of these names from Black Radio that we remember from back in those days. That's kind of how I'm feeling, a little nostalgic about that. How about you, Byron?
Absolutely.
But wait, hold it.
Yes.
I think Wayne is on.
Yes.
Let's get Wayne Gilman
in
on here. Wayne, are you there?
Hey, good evening, folks.
Wayne Gilman, former news director of WLIB. I forgot to tell you guys about this. Did you hear about it?
No. What's going on?
What went on?
Last night, Wayne.
Yeah, I know, I know. My stomach is settled now. I'm sorry about what happened. I guess I'm not as young as I used to be, as your mother reminds me. So it's just one of those things. I found myself in the emergency room, and I felt it coming on the day before, but I sure thought I would have been in good shape for that Wednesday evening program. But I'm sorry, there was no way that I could have sat around for the hour to talk comfortably. So it was
I'm glad that you're feeling better. I don't mean to laugh, but it was a little bit funny, Wayne, you know. But anyway.
No, but, it's over with.
But I
believe in full disclosure, so what could I say? But it sounds like you all are on a you're doing like a retrospect on radio. I didn't get the very beginning, but as I tuned in, I heard you rattle off some names of people I used to know or used to listen to.
Those were people at the event last night, Wayne. Those were people at the event last night, Wayne. And we were just, my mom was just rattling off the names. And Byron and I were just reminiscing.
What event was this?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Lisa, tell us about this.
Yeah, it was Ann Tripp, and I forget the other woman's name that's on W. You know her at BLS Radio. They had an event, and they were promoting black radio back, you know, when you guys were on the radio. And they were just giving props to everybody, saying thank you. Yeah, your picture was up on a big screen.
Mm-hmm.
Frankie Crocker, everybody, yep.
Where did this take place? Where was it again?
It was in Manhattan. Where was it, Lisa?
It was in New York. And it, like I said, they're going to start doing it annually. They want to invite all, you know, the black, they were promoting, you know, just giving props to black radios and stuff.
Right.
Bob Wall was there. But, you know, I guess they didn't get it to everybody because you guys should have been there.
Yeah, I didn't know anything about it, you know. I mean, I don't necessarily, you know, and I don't mean this with any kind of disrespect. I don't listen to BLS and LIB, particularly WLIB anymore because, I miss the information. And they have a right to go in whatever direction they want to. It's new ownership. And I don't think anything that Kay and I have experienced could ever be duplicated again. I'm sorry.
I think we need to sit down and collaborate on that.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that, you know, I mean, radio has changed and all that, but, it was just a period in time, and I guess what brought it to mind was the funeral last year for Vaughn Harper, you know, attended that. And just recently I went to an event for Reverend Sharpton, and it was just a defining moment in time, and unfortunately I recognize that we are getting older and that there's another generation that, you know, awaits to do what we used to do.
Yeah, that's speak for yourself.
I'm trying to be polite, Kay. I'm trying to be philosophical. You're not helping.
Right. It's a new day of black radio now. And it's a new day of black radio. New day of black radio now. It's not really the day it was. And Byron and I were just getting ready to talk about, you know, the who's who of those days in that era. And as an artist and someone listening, as an avid listener, and also a radio personality yourself, Byron, what do you what's your perspective on the institution of LIB, BLS, the institution of really black radio, but it was spearheaded by Inner City Broadcasting.
What were you doing in those days?
Well, I can tell you when I first came to New York in '89 from Atlanta, it was black radio that kept me connected to the roots of the ancestors, and listening to Bob Laws, back when mm-hmm. 1986, when I won the Cool Achiever Award for Brown and Williamson, I remember being on the radio in New York with Bob Law at his program as part of the PR campaign that they brought me to New York. So the radio station with you, Wayne Gelman, Kate Thompson, I mean, you were the people I was listening to when I first moved to New York. And so since that time, it's an honor to be working with you, because the place that I lived on 101st and Broadway I was renting from Sidney Smalls. And so it's
wow.
like I've had a link to you guys for a long time. And then, you
That's
know,
amazing.
Isn't that amazing how you 6 degrees of separation? Absolutely.
Yeah, I have a 2-bedroom available for you, Byron, if you want. You know, you can call rent
okay.
for me.
Oh, well, hey, I'm in Midwood, so it's like I when I leave Brooklyn, I'm escaping Brooklyn to come to see my friends in Manhattan, which I mean, for years I lived
yeah.
in Manhattan, and then I moved back to Atlanta. But when I came back to New York again, once again, it was being able to link back up with the BLS LIB family, and
right.
And you know, subsequently a few years later, I end up meeting Kay, you know, and it was on her show, which got me in to have my own radio show, and being invited it's special, because when I shut my own radio show down, the week after I shut it down, who should call me and invite me to be a part of the Kay Thompson Live family? Kay Thompson herself. So I'm honored. I truly am. So
and it's
you know,
it's
very important. Yes.
It's an honor to be with you too. We, you know, honest to God, I remember meeting you at the old location there in
yes.
Jersey City. And,
yes.
You know, you've certainly enlightened me about things either I've forgotten or was just certainly unaware of. And,
right.
You know, it's so funny. There's so many people walking our streets with information and so much talent that you wish that you could just bundle them all up. I was always, you know, at a point when I was given the opportunity to hire people, I always looked for people who knew more than me, because I
right.
wanted to learn something from that person.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
And unfortunately, I'm not going to call any names, but there were some people, and Kay is my witness, would not even use that as a premise to hire somebody, because they feared that their life or their livelihood would be threatened by that. And
wow.
And I just think it's sad when but I think that was the old school. I mean, I think, you know, this disc jockey would put down the other jock, and you know, it was like it was almost like a prize fight. You know,
right.
when I look back at people, and I will say people like Frankie Crocker and Eddie
yeah.
O.J. and Hal Jackson, yeah. Jerry Bledsoe, that group, it was almost like a constant battle as to who could vie and gain the most attention. But I wonder if even something like that would work today with social media. I'm not saying that they wouldn't.
Yeah.
Frankie was
yeah.
so inventive.
Yeah, why not?
That he would have.
Why not?
But it wouldn't be.
Well,
you know,
know,
the thing is, I don't know about you, Kay, but I grew up listening to. It was just something about radio that the fact that it was theater of the mind. I didn't even know what a Kay Thompson would look like, or Frankie Crocker, and I going. Now, if I had known, I would have gotten I would have had you at the station sooner, since I was there before you. But and I'm saying that with all due respect, you know, because I have my
well, you
own
know,
stories about.
You know, Wayne. You know what? I was talking about, my sister and I were talking about earlier today about this situation about black radio, because we were talking about the event last night, and really what's happening now is the decentralization of how people in this country, in the world, in fact, but particularly in our country, I don't know about the world, get our information, how we experience
yeah.
culture, how we experience the event of watching media on the tube, which is now coming in many forms. You know, the boob tube of the TV is not just a TV anymore. It's your computer. It's your phone. So how people are getting their content performed, entertainment content or news content, it's totally different now. And so when back in the day when, you know, we were all a lot younger, and you would watch the nightly news, for example, and there were only three stations that showed the nightly news. So everybody would know, and all the eyeballs pretty much were glued to one of three places at that nightly news hour. So everybody knew what was going on at the same time. The news was delivered to everybody at the same time. And now there's so many different outlets for that content, for that news, that people, and not only at the same time, different times, you know, people don't, you know, if you don't get an alert on your phone, you might not be up on the news as quickly as everybody else, right? So now the disparate aspect and the energy is just shooting off in all different directions. It's a lot more competition now for people to get everybody's eyeballs on one thing, or everybody to be aware of one thing. You're not going to get everybody's eyeballs at the same time anymore. Those days are gone, unless you're talking about a live event like a sporting event or something like that. So you're not going to get everybody's eyeballs all at the same time on anything else anymore anyway. It's just a matter of trying to get the most eyeballs, the most ears at the same, as much as possible, you know. And the flip side of that is that people can determine their own rerun schedule, right? Because remember, we had to wait for reruns back in the day. Now people can watch it as many times and whenever they want to. So it's such a different day now. And the thing about black radio or black media entertainment is that's the hurdle, I think.
Let me cut you off, Eric, but do you get the impression that what we experienced, and of course you're just a little bit younger than we are in terms of what you've been exposed to, if I may say.
But the bottom
line is that, do you think, you know, that those salad days of what your mother and I experienced are over, or do you think the people who are out there doing it today feel the same amount of prestige or at least a level of importance or self-worth that we did when we were doing it to provide information to people?
I personally think that they realize the responsibility they have. Now, the flip side of this new thing is that information is exchanged a lot easier, right? It's exchanged instantaneously. Also, news is broken instantaneously because everybody's walking around with their own little broadcast system in their hand. So news is broken instantaneously. So I think a lot of the young people now, on top of doing stupid stuff with that, are also realizing the power of it. That's how I think what was one of the things that pushed Black Lives Matter into the forefront, and how their movement, you know, really was the Arab Spring. And Byron, I want to get you in here on this too, because I think it was really with the Arab Spring that the advent of media, social media, helped to affect social change in the country. I think that everybody else picked up on it, but I think it really began those couple of years ago with the Arab Spring, if I'm not mistaken.
Well,
Are you talking specifically about black radio, Eric, or what? Because black radio goes back, you know, several years, you know, and
I'm talking about how things have evolved to where black radio has come to. And I'm talking about using Arab Spring as an example to say that social media that helped to get the news out about that thing. So that's where the evolution of black radio, the technology.
By the way, before we go any further, we're expecting to hear from Angelo Ellerbe, a very known, well-known entertainer, businessman, in Newark, New Jersey, but he's been all over the world, so we're hoping that he will call in. If not today, then next week, or we'll reschedule him. But Angelo Ellerbe has been invited, and hopefully he will be calling in because he's a fascinating, absolutely fascinating person. But I really want to get back to this event, you know, in New York City last night with a lot of the people from Black Radio. I mean, the Bob Laws, everybody, you know. Gary Bird did not show. I didn't see him. Didn't see Larry Hardesty. Who else, Aaron? You know? Yeah, and a whole lot of other people, but people were really out. There were so many people there that I really, you know, enjoyed it. And as I said, Bi Higginson. Oh, she's doing a remake, by the way, of Mama, I Want to Sing. So that'll be, you know, out. But I was absolutely amazed to see Melba, because we have a history. We really have history. It is because of Melba Moore that I studied, what is that? What was it? The Bible study. I said the Pilates method, you know, of movement. And they were doing the classes in downtown Manhattan in one of the stores, as a matter of fact. They had a big gymnastic thing for women. I forget the name of that big department store, but Melba introduced me to that. And she is she's alive and well, and she performed last night. That child sang, let me tell you. She really
Melba Moore also
was wonderful.
She also had a production company, I believe, a movie company. And I think she was responsible, I mean, and Wayne and Byron chime in here. I think, I'm pretty sure, and I don't know if you know this exactly, Mom, but I'm pretty sure Melba Moore was responsible for discovering Freddie Jackson, the singer that was popular, I think,
yeah,
back in the,
that sounds familiar.
The 90s, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she had a production company, because a friend of mine, James Bond III, that was in School Days with me, directed and wrote a movie called a horror movie. It was a black horror movie. Wow, I forget the name of it. Bill Nunn and Kadeem Hardison were in it.
Oh.
Melba Moore, and I think Melba's Death by Temptation is the name of the film.
Okay,
and I believe
yeah.
Melba Moore's production company produced this movie, as well as getting into, you know, they were into trying to produce a lot of musical artists. I don't know if you guys remember that.
Yeah, I remember the title. And I know that she was involved with this, I want to say, and I'm jogging my memory now, I don't want to, I think it might be her ex-husband, Charles, who basically had a role in music development with a lot of artists, including Melba herself. But she is certainly someone who had some challenges but was able to bounce back. I mean, I remember when she was on Broadway and she co-starred with, he's passed, Cleavon Little and Pearly. Going back a while. And really a great artist. And I know that she had one relationship that sort of turned her, twisted her, as sometimes relationships can do, but she was able to come back. You know, it's not easy being in the public's eye and to receive all that adulation, and then suddenly, you know, you're faced with a circumstance, and it changes your life, you know. And I don't think people are sensitive to that. There's a young lady on Channel 2 who just recently went through that. And, you know, it's fairly public. I can't think of her. I see her face now, but she anchors the evening news. And she was so distraught by the breakup of her relationship with this particular artist that she had to take off for a good 7-8 months. I at one point thought she was fired, and I just thought somebody who's so highly talented and has done so much for the network just suddenly disappear without any at least public acknowledgement. But you had to go through the internet to find out what was going on between the lines, and you know, she suddenly got herself together and she's back on the air, not to put her business out in the street. But my thing is, it's just that this medium that we all share, whether you're in acting, media, singing, whatever, you know, we have our moments, you know, and if you're not ready for those down times, as somebody once told me when I started out, and the late, great Eddie O.J. always said that you must have some expletive money on the side just in case you want to tell the boss, expletive deleted, you know? So I'll leave it at that. I never forget that. Mm-hmm. Always told me that, you know.
To have FU money, like they call it, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what he said, you know.
Right.
He said, have that on the side, you know. And he was actually referring to our former employers at the time when he told me about that. Mm-hmm. And I just said, oh, boy. You know, he was a hellraiser. But again, we go back to, and we can openly talk about this because there's nothing encumbering us now. And I say this with respect because I know that this is on the Payne's dime. But at the same time, you know,
on
there's
the
just
Payne's
so much
dime?
Information.
Excuse
huh?
me. Excuse me. On the Payne's dime?
But,
you mean Thompson
Payne? Yeah, did I? Is that was inappropriate to say, or I mean, I feel like I,
no,
you know, I feel
no,
like I come again.
I say no. I'm just correcting you. No, it's fine. But wait, no.
All right. Do I have to call my lawyer now? Should I, have I said too much?
I have
you
an
know?
Excellent, as you know. As you know, I have an excellent. His name is Ravi Batra. You know,
oh,
right
yeah, I know,
York
yeah,
City.
Yeah. I would lose in court. Any, I seem to have a propensity to lose in court, whether it's by tennis or some, you know. Anyhow.
Remember when the elevator dropped with me
yeah,
in it?
It? Right.
And I sued, and I won. Robert Batra was the attorney. Talk
you
to
live
him
not far
too.
From here. He's like in walking distance to my house. I haven't seen him in a long time, but we
yeah,
have talked about
so
that.
Good. Yeah, he's so good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. Big fun.
Yeah.
He's fussing
wow.
with some of these. I'm waiting for Angelo. I guess he probably forgot, and we'll schedule him for another time, because he's a fascinating person, and I've known him for many, many, many years, and he has a successful business downtown Newark. And if anyone. If you have not been in New Jersey recently, specifically about in downtown Newark, New Jersey, you are going to be absolutely amazed when you go downtown Newark. The New Jersey Performing Arts Center is fabulous with a lot of fabulous programming. Of course, that every year they bring in the Alvin Ailey Dance Company, and I'm right there every single year that Alvin, you know, is down there. There's what's the young tap dancer's name? He is. What's Savion Glover?
Savion Glover. Yeah.
Savion.
Oh, yeah.
Savion. Wow. And he's coming up. I think the end of October down there, everybody. So they have some really good shows.
That would be in the next couple of days.
Schedule there. Yeah. Yeah. That's right. That's right. I expect to be there. So we better get the tickets for early or something. But anyway, so it's a lot of going downtown Newark, and there's a building that you have to visit. It used to be the Haynes building that was like an overall department store. But now if you go in that building, you are be prepared to be in total and complete shock. You will not believe that building. I'm telling you, it's absolutely wonderful. It even has a Whole Foods in there. That building is so artistically, you know, constructed. It's wonderful.
Right.
It's right across the street from the Performing Arts Center. Okay? Downtown Newark is here. Listen, I'm going to call who is it? What's his name? Joe Bear at the mayor. What a Mary's son. What's the mayor's name over there? I've forgotten, Lisa. Barack.
Yeah,
Barack,
right.
Yeah.
Also. I want to talk about some things going on. You know, we had some big things from a political standpoint going on in the news.
Raz Baraka.
Raz Baraka.
Amirison.
Yeah. Right. Some big things going on there in the news. You know, kind of bombshell when you had these two senators, Republican senators, stepping up to the plate and calling the president out and doing the right thing.
Yeah.
John McCain, I mean, not John McCain, Bob Corker, Senator Corker, who was just going back and forth, willing to trade insults with the president, and also who's not seeking reelection. Also, Senator Flake from Arizona, who decided not to seek reelection, obviously because he was going to lose, although he does say he he doesn't want to run the way he would have to run to win. And, you know, these opportunities, these chances, I mean, obviously the rest of the Republican Party, just everybody's going to ride it out and do what's best for them. But it's nice to see at least a couple of people who I guess they finally got tired of being disrespected and seeing that Donald Trump's disrespect knows no boundaries. Because
exactly.
I don't think personally that these guys would have a problem with it. if that Trump, you know, he would respond a little different, or if he wasn't so obvious and out on Front Street with some of his behavior. I don't think that these people would be as bad out of shape or ready to resign. Maybe they would, I don't know, but I'm just throwing that out there. I'd like to hear what everybody else has to say about that.
The
since it's news.
Critical to tonight's incident is to recognize that back in the early days of the first couple of months of the Trump administration, he let it be known that he was taking the wraps off his generals to make decisions based upon whatever intel that they could come up with, and all they had to do was pretty much just get – they had the okay to do what they needed to do from the new president, 45. And what has happened is, as you are discovering, the generals took him at his word, and they began to engage in campaigns in Africa without discretion or any intel to the congressional committees as oversight. And now we're really finding out that they didn't have permission from the oversight committees in Congress and the Senate to engage in the confrontation. And there's something else that's really struck me in my gut with this entire assorted episode. There's not one single white-ruled country in the globe that we are being asked as Americans to be against. Notice how all of the countries that are on our visa list are all countries of color. Now, what really is very discouraging is that the geopolitical programs and agendas that we are engaged in, that it's been revealed that the Chad security forces that were supposed to be part of the 12 of our 12 armed forces unit had 32 Chad security forces to accompany them. Now, here's where it gets real deep, y'all. We're over in that area for two reasons, uranium and oil. And it was discovered that Exxon owes Chad, the government of Chad, some $32 billion. And so if you can imagine that if your security forces and the government is calling in its marker against Exxon, who is formerly headed by Rex Tillerson, that all of a sudden they pull out of their security responsibilities and our forces were pretty much naked. And here's something else to ask of the incident. I want to know how many more African Americans were of the 12 in our troop, because it took 62 hours before they discovered David Johnson's body, which meant that one of two things could have happened: either he was alive and captured and tortured because they would not let his widow see the body, because of they said because of the condition of the body, and secondly, who was the patrol leader? Because one of the things they always teach you in military school is that the patrol leader does a head count when incursions happen like this, and if you're in a rescue op being rescued, somebody's got to do the head count to make sure that all of the troops that were in your patrol are accounted for. And then here's the biggest, the blowback of all. Why are we as African Americans being engaged in a kind of a game in which we as African Americans, who perhaps have ancestors from that region, are being asked to disassociate our heritage and our ancestral origin? My grandmother's mother, first cousin, was the first and seventh president of Liberia. I have a direct link to West Africa. At that point, I'm beginning to ask questions of the political agenda of this administration, and why are they in Africa, and what are they doing to our motherland?
Well, they're using ISIS as the backdrop for having a presence there, but I think it's I'm with you, Byron. If our thought patterns are the same here, that it's more than that. I mean, we know Africa is a very resourceful and rich continent, you know, and the American history on that continent is it's unfortunate what we have done as an imperialistic governing body to just take over and try to rule and manipulate. It's interesting what you mentioned about how the state, how Exxon owes the government of Chad all that money. I had forgotten about that. But when you look at this whole Gold Star scandal and what's come out of it, there was some deficiency in terms of a level of protection based on reports that I've heard and seen, that these guys did not get the kind of adequate protection going into that area, you know. And unfortunately, this is on Trump's watch, you know. And just the cavalier, you know, I mean, regardless of what goes on, you know, he's had time to heal his words. If he made a mistake, if he followed Kelly's advice and said, you know, he knew what he signed up for, which I find to be, you know, very insensitive to begin with. We all know when somebody signs up for the military, what is the likelihood if they see combat? You know, that's a given.
You know,
and in Kelly's case, he's just using – I'm sorry, what?
Go ahead.
In Kelly's case, he's using the loss of his son as protection for Trump. And I'm surprised that he would go that way, because it seemed as if he was his own person up until that moment. But I happen to agree with Congresswoman Federica Wilson.
He lost a lot of respect there.
You know,
she deserves a lot of respect. And support.
You know, and it's unfortunate that we have to go through this.
I wonder that if that coffin was empty, okay? With David, you know, body, the reason why they could not find him, or it's a possibility. But I also understand that the shape that it must have been in, where it opened, but it's just wondering, you know. So you have no way of knowing.
Right. Yeah.
And you have no way of knowing what the assignment was for those, you know, Green Berets.
It raises more questions than there are answers at this moment. And once again,
I have a cousin who was Green Beret. Okay?
Yes.
So it's a very delicate situation.
It is very delicate. And I can tell you, one of the things that really is astonishing, because when I went to a military high school in Washington, D.C., and this was during the time of the Vietnam War, one of the things we were encouraged to do was to visit Walter Reed and the returning soldiers coming back from Vietnam. And I can tell you that memory back in 1968, still fresh in my mind, looking at wounded soldiers without arms, without legs, and realizing the ugly of war and how it impacts on everyone who comes back. Because I've worked with some veteran groups, and they, each and every one of them, have always said that they all return with PTSD. Every last one, and you only have 90 days to declare if you need the support from the Veterans Administration to get the care that they provide. Because if you don't take advantage of it in 90 days, you're out there, you're just, as they say, SOL. And do you know that 50% of the homeless people in this country are veterans?
Oh, wow.
I
did not know that. That's the shame of America.
That should never happen.
Good Lord. I had no idea.
It's scary.
It shocked me when I heard that from the veterans themselves. And I was like, my God, what are we doing? And to understand that these are the people we're supposed to give honor and respect to, but we treat them like dogs when they don't, by the time they come home and they've cycled out of the process of the system itself, there's no help for them.
That's right. And it is despicable that
Go ahead, Eric.
I was just saying the same thing. That it's really despicable that they only have that we kind of use up these our veterans use up their lives like that. It shouldn't be. I didn't know. A lot of people didn't know that you only have 90 days to declare that. It should be an automatic assumption, and that if you're returning home from war, that you're going to have some stress, post-traumatic stress syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
That should just be an automatic given.
I have some friends, Eric and Wayne and Kay, that are veterans of the Vietnam War who were claimed disability because of Agent Orange, and they're still waiting for support. That's the kind of history that we are giving our so-called support to our armed forces, the men and the women who serve on our behalf, and so it's despicable, it's disgusting, because what Trump is doing, if you notice, the buck never stops at his desk. He's punted it to somewhere else to take responsibility for the administration's work, whether he can't get legislation done. So he punts it back to Congress or the Senate, or if he, you know, and then he writes with ease his executive orders, which are not legislation. They're not policies. They're short term fixes for whatever ails that comes out of his office. But his only thing that he has done in the 10 months that he's been in office is to put Neil Gorsuch on the Supreme Court. There's no legislation that has been brought forward with his name on it other than executive orders.
Right. Well, that's what they were talking about, that his executive orders, while he's not doing anything from a legislative standpoint, what he is doing is affecting the court system. Because there's one court, one judge, and he's also has been interviewing people for that district attorney of the Eastern District job. But there's also one judge, I think, in North Carolina who was directly blocking the voter register, or was promoting the voter ID laws that were directly hurting African Americans. And the judge is even supported by people who are into eugenics. And I mean, this particular judge is an old time racist type of judge who is potentially up for a appellate court decision that Trump might be in a position to get him confirmed. And so he is affecting the country from that perspective and from the judicial perspective. I mean, you know, judges' jobs are lifetime positions. So, that's the messed up thing about it. Even though a lot of them don't like what Trump is doing, he's putting them in a position, you know, Flake and the other guy, you know, it's great that you guys are standing up, but you're going to make those seats vulnerable to get even more extreme Republicans in there, you know, Trumpers.
Well, it's also the chance too, Eric, that a Democrat could, cause I know that's been talked about too, but is to get the constituents to, you know, and Arizona is a funny state. I think there's enough, at least from what I saw from some of the Man in the Street reports I saw on TV today, that not everybody is totally sanguine with what's going on in Washington with Trump. There's some people who are supporting him because they're just dyed-in-the-blue Republicans, as we are dyed-in-the-blue Democrats, at least I am. And the thing is that, you know, I heard one person say, critical of Trump, that he was going to D.C. to drain the swamp, but if anything, he's created a new one, you know? That was very telling by itself, you know? And some of the things that he hasn't even been in there a year. And when you look at health care, you look at the economy, like, and the appointments, you're right. And then the Senate today passed the legislation that would do away with Obama's the Obama era Dodd-Frank Act that used to allow Americans to go in and challenge the banks and the creditors.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean, that to me is just so amazing that I'm not saying that I didn't anticipate this. This is not a surprise, but just to know that we don't even have that as a weapon to go back on. You know, he's turning the clock all the way back, even past the damage that we suffered with George W. Bush.
He is determined to destroy anything that President Obama had to do with.
Exactly.
Right? Here you have a top graduate of a top school as president of the United States, and he is African American and also by a white mother. Am I correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And his mother was white. His father was African. And
yes.
Because of that, because of the color of our skin, you know, he became president, not because of that, but he became a part of the people, a part of the black community, a part of our black heritage in Africa. Now, Trump is determined to destroy anything resembling or having anything to do with President Obama. That's very
now, clear. Remember, it was only a couple of weeks ago when he had during the United Nations week here in New York that he met with several of the leaders from African states. And what did he say? I should thank you all for allowing me and my friends to get rich off of you. That's what he said, people.
I didn't hear that one, but that speaks volume. I'm not surprised.
That's why I had to say what I said about our relationship to Africa. He is attacking our ancestral grounds that are holy to us. And he said that to leaders at the United Nations when he met with the leaders from African states and pointedly said, I want to thank you all because you're making me and my friends rich.
God.
And so you gotta really stand up and I really appreciate what the chair of the Congressional Black Caucus did in defending Congresswoman Wilson, because she's right. There's white supremacy in the White House, and they need to be called out for who they are. And this whole racial situation is being exacerbated, especially when you consider the policies that the Republican agenda are trying to push through Congress and Senate that they are co-signing on a white supremacist agenda. They got to be called out.
That's it.
Of course.
That's it.
Why? Wow. Brother.
Yeah.
Well,
you know, I was,
that's depressing.
Where do we go
really
from here?
We are in a civil war.
That's right. We are in a civil war as we speak, and we need to wake up and realize it. And this whole thing about the kneeling at the national anthem, you know, I mean, that's all shade. That's all obfuscation. They try to shade whatever they can throw up, and this is the way Trump operates. And he has the press behind him still playing this game with him as they. I've noticed something over the last several
weeks. What they don't do, I don't mean to cut you off, Byron, but let me just chime in here for a second. What they don't do is their follow ups aren't very strong. You know, they let them get away with stating these lies. They let them get away with. I mean, they go through all of these conniptions to do everything but calling these things what they are. They're lies. Mm-hmm. And the Trump from the president to his chief of staff, who lost a lot of respect by a lot of people when he mischaracterized or totally fabricated or made up. And they got me even doing it. Lied about that situation with Frederica Wilson. And when he didn't have to go into that, tried to spin it himself, which is really unbelievable. And then, you know, you got the Huckabee Sanders following up on it when they asked her about what's about this falsehood. And she says, if you want to argue with a gold star general, and the press just lets them say these things. I guess you have to preserve their right to get called upon or their right to have White House credentials, because they really let them get away with repeated lying and not challenging on them. And I understand, to be objective, you ask a question, the person's answer is the answer, but still, you can still be objective and have a follow-up question, for crying out loud, or have something inquisitive when they just flat out lie and make stuff up. I mean, the whole thing started. Go ahead, Goodwin.
I'm sorry, I don't mean to cut you off, but to a certain extent, they control the show. You know, I mean, the deal is they call out who they want, and because I know we have our I'm saying our woman. I don't mean that in a pejorative sense, but our person, our only symbol of objectivity there, April Ryan, who works for the what is now the, I guess it's still in existence, the God, my mind has just turned to mush. I used to report to these people every day. But the deal is, it's just one of the last of the African-American black news networks that we have in this country. And it's just unfortunate, because I know that if called upon, you know, she may have her hand up, but very often sometimes, you know, they may not give you an opportunity to ask a question or even do a follow-up. And I know full well Trump knew what he was doing when they got rid of Spicer and brought her in, you know. So she follows the letter of the law, or Trumpism, you know, from the word go, you know. And she's quick on her feet in terms of either she's given prep time to actually send the president's message or 45's message to the troops. But you're right. Some people are timid to do the follow-up, knowing full well there is a follow-up. And then very often I think that they cut you off. You know, it's just one of those things. Haven't seen
right.
that.
Well, right. That was my assumption, that clearly some of these answers that are allowed to be given, I mean, obviously someone's hands are tied, because certainly the ridiculous nature of saying, if you want to argue, I mean, she just continues to lie. Obviously, Huckabee Sanders, and she's a much better person at spinning the lies, obviously, than Sean Spicer, which is why she got
right.
the job.
Exactly.
I mean, what really concerns me is how he seems to infect everybody convince everybody to go to the dark side, right? Because I don't know much about John Kelly, and I'm going to assume that if he was a Republican reported by a Republican president, him being a military man, and him talking about, you know, I remember when we respected religion, and he started waxing nostalgic in that same press conference. So I can only assume that he has a certain perspective about life that might not be the same perspective that I have, and it might not even include freedom for everybody, right? So when he decides to pile on in terms of protecting, carrying the water for Trump's lies, and then spin a whole new lie of his own and make up some wild stuff, it's just unbelievable the lengths. I mean, it really is shocking the lengths to which these people will go through. And I guess we saw it before in the Bush era, but you know, with Trump, he's just really, and maybe that's the difference between him and all of the other Republican types. He's really obvious about what his intentions are. Doesn't care about anything that anybody thinks. He's going to get paid, try to get people paid that are close to him, and that's it. If you don't like it, too bad.
It's deep. Scary.
Yeah, listen, I am calling for all women, mainly African-American women, Latin women, Asian women, Indian women, all other women, to get together and to really come out and let your voices be heard, and let your voices support our legislators who believe in freedom and justice for all, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's getting to the point where it is almost, you absolutely, as a mother, you know, with children, you get to be afraid when they step out of the door. And that should not happen in the United States of America. All right?
Regardless of how old your kids are.
My Uncle Stanley was a lieutenant, you know, and my mother's brother. And he was blown up in Italy. All right? My Uncle Bob was in the service.
Mm.
And so many other relatives from here to Virginia.
All right.
So I wish all women would stand up for women, particularly. Let your voice be heard.
Okay.
Let our voices be heard.
All right. Also, before we go, we've got another couple of minutes before we're going to be off the air. We would be remiss if we didn't recognize the passing of Fats Domino, one of the pioneers of rock and roll.
Oh, wow,
He was the original, one of the originals. And excuse me, and also Robert Guillaume, who played Benson on TV for a number of years. He also passed away, and he was a pioneer in terms of the acting world and what he did in playing this kind of new style black servant, black butler, who had an attitude and seemed to be smarter than everybody that he seemed to be working for. And eventually Benson went from being a butler to being an executive assistant to being lieutenant governor to running for governor in the final seasons of Benson. And it was two different shows. One was Soap, and the other one was Benson. So Robert Guillaume was groundbreaking in that respect, too. And I read a little bit about him, his background. He grew up pretty rough, you know, didn't know his father. His mom was not of any help to him. And
he's from New York?
I think, Cleveland or Missouri or something like that. The Midwest,
okay.
I think, somewhere.
Oh.
And this was just from an article in the Times that was just out yesterday. But Guillaume wasn't his name originally. He didn't like the name because it was such a negative family that he came from. And he said there were a lot of, I think his last name was Williams or Washington. And he said there were a lot of Robert Williams walking around. So he renamed himself Robert Guillaume. And you know, the Benson character was a pivotal character in American TV, you know.
Yeah.
In terms of African Americans and where we stood culturally. And so, and Robert Guillaume also was one of the first people to be a black Phantom of the Opera that played to do that as well. So, you know, both of those guys are giants and pioneers in their respective fields. Certainly Fats Domino, it was the man without a doubt. So unfortunately,
right.
Those guys are passed on.
And they were both 89 years of age, you know, which I found interesting. You know, they're from the same era, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Changing of the guard.
Yes, sir.
Hmm. Well, I remember Robert Guillaume. I remember, I just have to say, it's Robert Guillaume, and he was on Benson, and, you know, it was kind of late Soap. Was it Benson or Soap? He was on Soap, too. Didn't he start on Soap first?
Right, started
on television
Soap,
show.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, and then he would, it was kind of late, so it was one of those late night risque type of shows, so we'd have to go, you know, go to bed, past our bedtime, but we would be upstairs, and I'd always hear my father laughing so loud that I would have to keep back down the stairs just to see that last scene, Benson saying, "You want me to get that? You want me to get that?" He's the butler looking at them like, you know, I'm not getting that. He gave him that Malcolm X look.
Big fun. And Robert Guillaume, in one of his interviews, said he could play that role, play a servant, but there is a way that he could play it to show that the servant was not servile, he said. And it was not, you know, kind of a beholden to the people, but played it with dignity and played it, you know, that was this guy's job, but he was no idiot and nothing. That choice made that character stand out. That is one of the standout characters from the Soap series, and obviously because he got his own show, spinoff from that. So, and from that era, Robert Guillaume was the most famous one to come out of that show, you know?
Yeah, you know, it's funny you should mention that because as you mentioned, the dichotomy there in terms of his personality, what he was projecting on the screen, I go back, I'm old enough to say I remember Rochester or the old Jack Benny show. And that was the caricature of, well, not a caricature, but the character that, you know, the average black would portray if given an opportunity to be on the show. Oh, Master Benny, or this, that, the other, and
the whole nine.
You know, it's just, that's life in the States.
That's right. Well, it's about that time, everybody, on Kay Thompson Live Show on the Blog Talk Radio Network. You have been listening to Kay Thompson Live on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Want to say thank you to our resident guest, Mr. Byron Saunders. Byron, hello.
Byron,
I guess Byron has Mr. Wayne. Okay, thank you, Byron Saunders, our resident guest.
Peace and love, guys. Okay.
All right. Thank you, brother. Thank you.
I'm glad to have been part of this week, and I'm sorry about last week. I look forward to next.
All right.
Stay
thank
healthy.
You, Mr. Wayne Gillis.
Stay healthy, Wayne.
Then the K-Thompson Live Show. I'm Eric Payne, the son, Citizen Payne, and you are?
I'm your mother.
Kay Thompson. All right, that's Kay Thompson Live. We'll see you again, everybody, next week. BlogTalkRadio.com, Kay Thompson Live, 8 to 9 p.m. every Wednesday. And the show is also archived. You can listen to us at any time. Take care. See you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye, everyone.
I want to say, what the? No.
That's funny.
You should wait until it goes off.
I always try not to get them deep, like, you know, get too deep in, you know, that, you know, negative stuff. So, because Trump is, you know, every time I get on here, I want to let the people know that he is Hitler reincarnated, I'm telling you. But I don't need the FBI or whatever his henchmen are looking at us, you know. Who is that?
Yeah, it's interesting. I did. I was wondering why I said that, Tom. I didn't put that. Oh, that's probably what happened. That's
what?
So can you fix that? Well, you can fix that, right? Maybe, can I do it? Still, you can always put the Arab. I mean, that doesn't have to do the wrong. Okay. We'll just see. All right, so end episode. I'll show you what's in the episode.